Today on Tips from the Top Floor, we'll talk about high-speed photography, high-speed videography, and even electron microscopy. Also, I have a special guest today. Valérie Jardin is back to tell us about some of the amazing projects she's working on. This episode is brought to you by discoverthetopfloor.com. Join us on one of the spectacular 2019 photo tours for some amazing photography in northern Norway, on a ship around the Lofoten archipelago, or on the Bohemian Castles tour to Prague and the Czech Republic, to Kyrgyzstan, one of the most beautiful landscapes and cultures along the Silk Road, or to capture the breathtaking fall colors of Romania and Transylvania in fall. Spend a week or two dedicated entirely to photography and to great cultural experiences, meet like-minded people, learn from the best, and see places that you always wanted to see or that you didn't even know existed. Find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. That's discoverthetopfloor.com. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 848 for Thursday, November the 29th, 2018. Tips from the top. Hey, hello, welcome, it's Chris, and I'm back with a new episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Yeah, you paused for a short while. Well, slight chance for next week to be shaky too, but the busy is going on. I'll be traveling next week for work and visiting family, which we're, again, decided to do before or outside of the holidays, because Monica and I, early in January, like on the 1st of January, will hop on a plane and take the long journey to New Zealand. But I'll do my best to bring you an episode next week. So today I will finally tell you more about the thing that I've teased for a while, my visit to the Rochester Institute of Technology. And then later in this episode, I will also welcome Valérie Jardin to tell me more about a few of the projects she's currently working on. Pretty interesting and cool stuff. Also, by now, you'll definitely know that I'll travel to New Zealand for several weeks, starting on the 1st. And I will work hard to pre-record as many episodes as I can. I will also try to record episodes while I'm there, but we'll have to see how that works. One thing that I can definitely use help with, and I'm asking you for your help here and right now, is if you send in your photo questions. Biggest help ever, because if I have this folder of questions, I can pick and match and put them together, and the sooner the better, okay? This is the end of November, and I only have a few more weeks left to prepare all of the stuff, and not just for this podcast. I'm pre-recording for like 5 different shows, so this is a bit of a crazy time. And if you send stuff in, it's going to help me make more episodes. You try to stump me, ask difficult questions, that kind of stuff, but by all means, also ask simple questions. Every time someone asks a seemingly really simple question, there are always several hundred listeners out there, I guarantee you that, who are very happy that finally someone had the guts to ask that question. You know, with dead simple stuff. Like, I mean, okay, don't ask me which way to point the camera, but, you could actually ask me that and I'll probably be able to say something about it. But, you know, simple stuff like, I don't know, what's that button on my camera do? What's that symbol on my camera for? How do I take a picture of my black cat without the result being just a black blob on my photo? Or how can I make my smartphone night photos better? That kind of stuff. You know, stuff that you think you should know, because no one else asks that, but you don't know them, and you're all self-conscious and you don't ask them. That's the kind of stuff I'm looking for. So don't be shy. Pick up your pocket camera, aka your smartphone, and fire up the voice memo app and record your question, and then send it to voice@tfttf.com. That's voice@tfttf.com. Thank you. So, the Rochester Institute of Technology, RIT, that's where I was several weeks ago, and wow, was that exciting. So Monica and I were in Rochester, New York, And we met with our friend John. You will certainly know John. He's the person I've been doing Himalayan trips with. He's the one who kind of helped me kick off this entire travel thing with the initial 2009 Everest trek. Still very fond memories of that. And he's also a professional cameraman and filmmaker. And he, yeah, and his mother lives in Rochester. So we had a good place to stay. And thank you, Susan, for hosting us for so long. And we also, like, we visited a lot of things and we had a great time there. And one of the things that that Susan actually organized for us, she made the contact to a guy called Ted Kinsman. And Ted used to be a high school teacher at the same high school where Susan taught. And he's now an associate professor at the Rochester Institute of Technology, and especially at their department or school of photographic sciences. So they have, Rochester, that's the place where Kodak is from. That's where George Eastman lived and worked. And Kodak is everywhere in Rochester. If you drive through Rochester, there's a Rochester theater and a Kodak theater and a Kodak that. And Kodak used to be probably the biggest employer in Rochester and left quite a legacy. And that's one of the reasons, I guess, why the Rochester Institute of Technology, the RIT, has a lot of photography in it. They have this whole school of photographic arts and sciences. So there's this branch for the arts, and then there's this branch for the sciences. And of course, the sciences side teaches scientific photography, and they play with a lot of amazing toys. And I was lucky enough to meet Ted, and Ted took pretty much a whole bunch of time out of his day and showed us around and showed me experiments. And I sat in with a class where they teach high speed photography to beginning students, and we did some experiments and we did some fun stuff, really fun stuff. And he also gave us an overview on how an electron microscope works, how you prepare specimens for electron microscopy, scanning electron microscopy. We get to play with a lot of toys, and there's video of all of that. And it's finally done. I finally found the time to sit down for a couple of days and edit all that and put it together and upload it. So if you want to go and watch right now, again, it's quite nerdy, but I think it's pretty awesome what the information that we got. And you will see me in different situations. The quickest way to go there, it's all on YouTube, is tfttf.com/RIT. tfttf.com/RIT. And yeah, the things, let me go through a few of the things that we did, because again, we spent some time or most of that day in the high speed lab where they teach high speed photography. And I think there are mainly at this point two different kinds of ways of doing high speed photography. Well, there are more than that, but those are the easiest ones, the most accessible ones. There, at least the first one is pretty much accessible to everyone who has a flash and a camera and a dark room. And that's, yeah, you use, instead of the shutter on your camera, which, I don't know, can go down to maybe an 1/8000th of a second. Many consumer grade cameras only go down to like a 4/1000th of a second. But even with a studio flash, you can probably get down to, well, in case of the high-speed lab, maybe a 20/1000th of a second, which is fairly short. And it's fairly good to freeze a lot of fastish motion. So one of the little experiments they have set up there, again, for the students to discover what this is all about, was simple dropping something and taking a shot of it in midair. And in that case, it was Scrabble letters. So it was a little trapdoor that is actuated by a solenoid. So you have a little Arduino, and that Arduino does Two things. It trips the trapdoor. It opens the trapdoor. So you put stuff in there and it falls down. And then after a few milliseconds, so to give the stuff that's falling enough time to fall to a certain place, then it trips a flash. And if you put all this in a dark room and you open the shutter on your camera and then you you start that little timer that first trips the trapdoor and then trips the shutter, the flash, you can freeze that motion of that thing falling. And one of the examples they use there is what I've dubbed the Scrabble drop. So you take a bunch of Scrabble letters, you put them in that trapdoor, and you spell a word, and then you get behind that place where that stuff will fall. So your face is in the shot, the letters are in the shot, and you end up with a shot with like Scrabble letters spelling out a word hovering in midair. And that's a pretty cool thing because you don't need any Photoshop for that. You don't need any post-production for that. It's a photo comes straight out of the camera, no layers, no trickery other than a little bit of, of high-speed photography. And you freeze that in midair and it looks awesome. And I managed to, well, I tried to spell TFTTF, but I got it backwards. So it's TFTFT. But anyway, that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of one of the early things that students learned there. And it was total fun to do that. We do similar things here in Germany when we do our Abbey workshop every year. But yeah, having that in this kind of an environment was cool. And then Ted also showed us around in some of the stuff that he did. You might have seen this. Got a bit of a viral distribution. The coffee printer, again, a thing that's there to kind of get students excited about a different kind of working with pictures. And yeah, a coffee printer uses a bottle, like a Nalgene bottle with a little dripper attached to it. And that dripper gets actuated by a little solenoid. And it can drip like 32 different sizes of a drop of coffee onto paper. And then this whole thing is on an XY plotter kind of arrangement. So you get to print pictures with 32 different gray tones. And I don't know, resolution is definitely not huge, but that's not what it's about. It's a teaching project and it's a very exciting project. If you go and enter coffee printer RIT in YouTube, you'll find that. That's one of the things. Of course, they also do the classic. I think MIT started that. Edgerton at MIT invented the electron flash that enabled these kind of things. And he also pioneered the high-speed work when, you know, the bullet through an apple kind of thing. We've all seen those. They, of course, do those as well. I even asked Ted, do you shoot guns in here? And he said, yeah, sure we do. So I'm not sure what kind of guns, but it's a great field for experimentation. It's still by far not over. I mean, the Scrabble drop, it's kind of not very fast moving. It's just something falling for a few inches. So you don't need that fast a flash. But even that, they use an Einstein Studio Flash 640 watt seconds, but those 640 watt seconds, if you turn that down in to its lowest setting, to its lowest brightness, then yeah, that flash will shoot at something even shorter than 20 thousandths of a second. So that's a pretty short thing. But then when they shoot bullets through apples and we want to catch those in the air without too much blur, we're talking like much, much faster flashes. He said that they had different flashes back there, which went to something like a millionth of a second. So tried to do this with a regular mechanical shutter. It's just not possible. Another thing I was totally, I found really cool was a balloon pop experiment. Again, we're talking dark room, pop the balloon. The audio, the bang of the balloon gets caught by a microphone that trips a flash. And then you have a balloon mid-pop, which is in itself is a fun experiment. When you do it as part of a class, I sat in a class, so this time it wasn't me in front of a class, but it was me sitting in there with the beginner students and just participating. And John did a great job catching all that on the camera, and it's just a fun thing, especially as we use a little physics trick to make that popping balloon a bit more interesting, where you put like a little water in that balloon, and just a few drops, and so the water is in that balloon. It creates a very saturated, humid environment in there, and it's under pressure. So the moment the balloon pops, that pressurized humid environment will lose its pressure. It gets depressurized. And what happens if you depressurize a saturated humid environment is that it forms fog. And just for like a tiny fraction of a second, it goes foggy. So you have that balloon popping, and if you time that exposure just right, you get not just the skin of the balloon being like kind of half ripped open, but the shape of the balloon is still there with a few splashes of water and some fog in there. And the photo that came out when it was my turn was just amazing. I'm so happy with the photo. I put on my most grim face. I stabbed that balloon with a knife in the dark. I was so glad I didn't stab myself. And it turned out, yes, so good that I made it my avatar on Twitter and on Facebook and in a lot of different places. That's now my avatar because it was so great. Now, that's the high-speed photography that you do in the dark with the flash being the shutter. But then, of course, there's a high-speed video cameras. You've all seen the slow-mo guys on YouTube, for sure. And if not, then you should check them out. They have access to these phantom high-speed cameras. But there's other high-speed cameras. And in that high-speed lab, the RIT has an Edgerton high-speed lab, named after the inventor of the whole high-speed genre. And Edgerton... Mr. Edgerton, I'm talking about the camera. That camera, I don't know how fast it goes, but they used it at a moderate, like kind of 1,000 frames a second. And by the way, your smartphone in your pocket, if you have a modern smartphone, I think you can do something like 120 frames a second or 240 frames a second. So that is four times slower. And they did a few interesting things with that, including something that Ted calls a peripheral streak photography, which it's hard to explain. You have to see it, but just imagine you want to shoot a picture of a vase, and you want to take that picture from all around the vase. So you want to kind of stretch out the entire vase onto a flat surface. And one way you can do this is by rotating that in front of a fast video camera. And then from each frame, just take the center column out and put it on the side of a picture. So you build a picture from just that vertical column of pixels over time. And you end up with an unwrapped vase, pretty much. If you've been doing like computer animation, 3D stuff, think of a texture map. That's pretty much what we're looking at here. And of course, I was sitting in on the class, so they chose me to sit on a turning chair and become the subject. So they unwrapped my face, like my entire head, in one photo. It's one photo where you see the front of my face and my ears and the back of my head. Everything is in there. Looks quite weird. And then, of course, again, there's a video about this on tfttf.com/RIT. And then the one thing that's not high speed related, but that I completely loved was the electron microscopy, the electron microscope. Ted turns out to be really good at doing that stuff. Takes some training, takes some learning, and he's got a several thousand of hours on various different electron microscopes. So he definitely knows what he's doing. And the interesting thing is you can't just take a specimen and put it in there. That won't work. You need to prepare it first. And there's specimen that you need to dry first. And then there's, but then you have to gold coat them. There's a gold, called a gold sputter coater. That's a chamber that you put in a vacuum and then you put, fill it with argon and you have a piece of gold in there. And then you put some atom layers of gold on the outside of your specimen so the electron microscope can actually see it. Because it's electrons, it's not light. So you have to have it, you have to have it coated. Doesn't work any other way, apparently. And so we did that. We used some seeds and we put them in a sputter coater and then take the air out and fill it with argon and do the coating. And then we put in the electron microscope and that needs to be under a vacuum. So there's a vacuum pump involved. And then you go into, I don't know what the highest magnification. I think he said it, with a good, well-prepared specimen under ideal conditions, that microscope could do like a 100,000 magnification. Don't ask me what that is in focal length, but it's really interesting to see that kind of thing. And to be in that same room and to see someone work with that and to watch and to ask nosy questions, so, which is what I did. We also filmed that, and it's also available as part of that series. And pretty cool, pretty cool. Lots of fun there. To see how the students learn scientific photography. Then also to see how they to learn about what they become after that, because obviously a school like that has a goal to get the students into good jobs. At the end of the whole thing. And they apparently have no problem getting a job. The scientific photography students will be picked up by NASA, by car companies, especially for self-driving cars. That seems to be a huge market now. Well, not that I doubt that, but I'm just looking at Tesla with, I don't know, what does a current Tesla have? 8 cameras? At least 8 cameras. But even my Hyundai Ioniq has a camera in the back. It has at least one in the front to watch the road and to watch the stripes on the side of the road to help keep the car in the lane. So there's at least 2 cameras in there. But self-driving cars, like proper self-driving cars, or at least the ones that will be self-driving, there is a bunch of cameras going in that, and you need engineers to be able to work with the pictures from those cameras. A lot of that stuff is about measuring, about seeing how big things are, how far they are away, where they exactly are, how they are moving, and you can do all that with cameras these days, and cameras are very central to this whole field. So that is a place where the students will end up. And another place where he couldn't tell me that much about was the military, of course. There's a lot of camera stuff there and a lot of classified technology. But yeah, it's an amazing place, the Rochester Institute of Technology, amazing place. I will try to get Ted here on the show to explain a few things, to maybe even answer your questions. So if you have a question for Ted, I don't know when I can get him, but I'll do my best to get him on the show. Ask your questions. Send them in. voice@tfttf.com. Make sure you include that's a question for Ted, and I will do my best to get him here to answer some of those questions. So again, videos are at tfttf.com/RIT. That's tfttf.com/RIT. And that link is, of course, also in the show notes. All right, you heard me. Send in your questions either for the show in general or for Ted. tfttf.com/voice. That's where you can find everything. tfttf.com/voice. voice in your web browser, or send them directly via email to voice@tfttf.com. voice@tfttf.com. I'm so looking forward to hearing from you. And again, I'm preparing episodes for January, the entire month, and part of February as well. So send in your questions. I need your help. All right. Valérie Jardin has been on the show before, but I'm just so happy that she had time again to tell us what she's up to right now. So without further ado, the wonderful Valérie Jardin.
Oh, you say it so well.
Yeah, I learned French at school.
I'm impressed. I learned German. I have to,
Well, but that's pretty much the extent of my French. I can survive, but not much more. I've lost all the words. So, Valérie, I was just a guest on your show, and you're a guest on my show. And we've talked, I think last time we talked was probably a year ago. So let's catch up. Let's see what has happened since, what projects you've been working on. You're located in the U.S.
Yes, I'm a French citizen located in Minneapolis, although I spend about a third of the year back in France now again. Yeah,
so
from Normandy.
What's the weather like right now? We are recording this end of November.
Oh, well, it's snowing, little snow. It's been an early winter.
To be expected.
But not too bad yet. But yeah, the rivers are already frozen and the lakes are frozen. It's kind of sad knowing that it's going to be like that for another 5 months. But what do you do? That's when you trap. That's when you plan the warmer climate workshops, right?
That would be my next question, because you do workshops, you do projects, you have a podcast, you have webinars, you write books. I mean, you fill the entire gamut. What do you do during winter when it's kind of hard to go out and take photos?
Well, I just started a new project called The Artist and the Space, and I just visit artists in their studios. Minneapolis is a very, very vibrant artist community. Like so many old factories and warehouses have been converted into artist studios and lofts. So hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studios, literally. And so I love their space. I love the light in those studios, especially painters. You know, usually they have the best studios.
Oh, the big windows, yeah.
Yes, and I love talking with them and making friends. And usually I start with I walk around, you know, those big buildings with my camera, and I knock on doors and walk in and chat. And then when something happens, like there is a connection, then I feel like, yeah, I would like to photograph that person. And so I just started this new project. I've done that many times before, just a few couple pictures here and there. But this is actually a real project that I'm doing for the winter month when I'm here, called The Artist in the Space. And I photograph Carl and Patricia so far, and Phil coming up too. But so I do a series of photographs, all black and white. I shoot actually with a focal length that's not my everyday focal length. I'm a 23 millimeter shooter on the X100 by Fuji. I'm actually using my fastest prime, the 35 1.4, because it's often dark, on the X-Pro2, just to, you know, do something different. I set it in black and white acros. I do little to no post-processing. The point is to have fun with my camera and not spend time in Lightroom. So I already have the 5 second rule when it comes to my street photography. If it takes more than 5 seconds to work on this picture, I'm not going to do it. So here it's even less than that, because most of the pictures are just straight out of the camera and playing with light and silhouettes of the artist working. So it's really about the artist, not the art, because of course, like the two that I just photographed, their work is all color, but it's really about the artist and the space. So this is so fun. I love it. It feeds my creative soul.
So that's a project. What's the goal for the project? Are you just, you're in a collection phase right now. Is this going to be a book? Is this going to be an exhibition?
Possibly. I'm not sure, actually. Really, this is totally self-serving. Mm-hmm.
I fully understand. Yep.
Yeah. And who knows where it's going to be? You know, who knows who is going to notice it? But it's so important to, you know, we're busy inspiring others, all your writing, teaching. So it's really important to just do something just for you. And I've also been working with Joshua Coombs, you know, this young Englishman who started the movement hashtag do something for nothing. And he cuts the hair of homeless people around the world.
Oh, yeah. I heard of him, yeah.
So we had a big exhibit this summer in Minneapolis of the I've documented his work on the streets of Paris and New York and Minneapolis. So we're going to continue the project next year. Josh and I are very close. It's like my other kid. He's my third kid, basically. And I have two boys, and now I have Josh. And we love Josh and what he does. He's just the most amazing human being. And so documenting his work and helping him, I mean, he has a big following, you know, goes all over the world, but that's all he does now. So he gets, we actually published two eBooks that are free for download, and people give a donation that goes to help Josh continue the important work that he's doing. Cause you know, I don't want him to become homeless himself. What he does is so important. So trying to help him, there is a limited edition Valérie Jardin camera bag by Cozy Speed that came out and the proceeds goes to do something for nothing. So being involved with that project was also so good for me. And I always want now to make space in my schedule to work for humanitarian project. But at that size, you know, the grassroots, is that how you say it?
Grassroots, yeah, I think it is. Where can we find more? I mean,
on my website. Everything is on there. Do something for nothing. There is a whole a few galleries there, and we shed a lot of tears. We a lot of laughs too. I mean, we spend. And we worked as a team. I wasn't the photographer. I was really part of the experience with Josh.
That's important.
Well, first of all, I shoot so close. At 23 millimeter, you can't really, you know, hide. Mm-hmm. And it was about it's about the human connection and then listening to the stories those people want to share with us. And then taking the photograph and a series of photographs of each encounter, and then the exhibit was, you know, full storyboards with their words and my pictures. So it was a big hit. We're trying to get the exhibit to travel now, to reach more people and raise awareness, because this is a problem that's only getting worse all over the world.
And just that one part, the haircut, people have to understand this, will make the difference between getting a job and not getting a job.
Absolutely. And then just giving
them... It's life-changing. A haircut can be life-changing.
Yep, absolutely. Yes. And like we also use just one of those little instant printers, you know? So Josh on his... And everybody has to go check out Joshua Coombs and Do Something for Nothing on Instagram. He posts the before and after shot that he does with his phone, and he puts them side by side. And the transformation
is... It's crazy. Yeah.
So crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And then some people that... You know, we met on the streets after getting the haircut. They said, well, maybe I can go apply for that job. Or maybe I can contact my mom. I haven't seen her in 2 years. And we took those little pictures and we gave them to them. And we printed those pictures. And then they said, wow, I look so good. And, you know,
it gives you a lot of confidence. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was an amazing project. And I've been doing this with Josh for a little over a year now. And, yeah, the goal is to keep going. And then after we have maybe 5 or 6 cities to do a large coffee table book of the project and the stories.
All right. You're keeping busy with other things as well, though. you just wrote a book, a new one about street photography.
Yes, street photography, creative vision.
Which is your thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of resist the street photography. I didn't want that title, actually, but you know how it is. When you publish a book, you don't really
have to say
so. I'm a visual storyteller, but yes, it's all candid. It's everyday life. There's so much beauty out there. And
So the title is Creative Vision Behind the Lens. What is in the book? What can we expect?
So the first part one is a how-to. you know, everything you need to know about street photography, how to approach it, the different ways you can shoot it. But then my favorite part, and the part that actually everybody loved and I think is a good way of teaching, is actually the creative vision behind this, the photograph. So I take you on a photo walk, basically. There's a series of over 100 photos, and I tell exactly what was going on in my mind, what I saw, how I saw it, how I approached it, why I shot it the way I did, why color, why black and white, because I make those decisions in camera, and until the final image. So, and I use that as a teaching tool when I'm not in the field with my student. You know, I teach webinars that way, the creative vision behind the lens, where I take them on a photo walk. And that way you cover so much. You know, you cover, there's a maybe a close-up or a street portrait and then a silhouette. So in the book, as you're reading those stories, which are, you know, you can read one a day, they can be like a mini chapter, you will learn, because either you will learn a technique that you learn in the book, in the part one, that you apply in you see me apply in that picture. And so it covers so many different things. It's kind of my favorite way of teaching when I'm not with the students in the field.
Isn't it fun? I mean, writing a book, I learned from writing only two books so far, that you learn most about a subject when you write a book about it.
Yeah, and teaching is the best way to learn.
Definitely, and writing a book is even better.
Yeah, although I don't go quite in depth like you do, but...
Well, it's but you have more books. Doesn't matter. So, what else is keeping you busy?
Workshops. I mean, that's my life. I love to teach in my favorite cities and meeting people. You spend, you know, some of my workshops are week long, some are weekends, about half and half, half weekend, half week long, 10 to 12 a year. And I'm in Paris a lot. And I add a new city or two every year that I, you know, then I switch them around. I just go where I want to go. So this coming year, I added Barcelona and Berlin.
I just see that list. Yeah, Barcelona, I have a few in the US. Berlin, yeah, Berlin is great. Yep.
Yeah. So in August. And then Paris, I think I have four or five in Paris. I start January with Paris because I love January in Paris. Yeah, it gets cold, but people are so elegant and the light is so beautiful and it's so authentic. It's one of my favorite times to be in Paris, so I love it.
You know what? I've been to Paris probably 7 or 8 times in my life, but I never went there for photography. We have to change that.
Yes, you're going to have to come on one of my workshops as a special guest someday.
I'll work on that. All right. Yeah. So you also do a podcast, Hit the Streets.
Hit the Streets with Valérie Jardin. Yeah, it's my second podcast. I was on the TWIP network for 2 years with Street Focus. And then after episode 100 and some, I started my own under my own brand, learned everything in a week and never missed a Thursday.
and you do it weekly and you have guests such as me, which is cool. Yeah. Just very cool.
It's all about inspiration and fun. It's not about the gear.
Right. And then if people don't want to travel to a workshop or get a book, you also do webinars.
Yeah, that's my way of...
When did you start that?
A few months ago, because I was tired of dealing with sponsors for the podcast. And then I figured, okay, how can I... I mean, I don't mind sponsors, and I know that, you know, there's value in, you know, I have a big audience now and 150 some countries, but, you know, sponsors want to, you know, I don't want to sell something I don't believe in. So I don't have time to try new software and new this and new that. So I thought, how can I go around this? And still, you know, I have an editor. I need to pay people for this podcast and everything that goes behind it. And my time, that's podcasting costs a lot of money. People don't realize it because they get it for free, but it costs money. So I figured, how can I sponsor it with my own brand? So I started my webinar series. So people pay for the webinar. You know, they can pick and choose. It's not a membership thing. They can pick one and then be done. And then that's how I sponsor my own podcast.
So you you show people, you tell people, you have Q&As.
Yeah, it's I mean, I have some topics, like my next one is called Anonymous, and that's based on my other new book, How to Photograph People Without Revealing Their Identity.
Helps depending what country you're shooting in. Yeah.
And I have some about, you know, how to shoot the best silhouettes. I have some about how to approach a stranger in the street to do a portrait. And then I do every other month, I do those creative vision behind the lens, those photo stories with only recent photographs. I just did one last week and it was all photograph that I shot in the past months. And then I tell the how I approached it and why this way and why black and white. And then this was the shot I took before and see the difference. And so it's a great way to teach. And this keeps fresh because I only use new pictures.
That is awesome. So you keep doing those and people go sign up. That's a great way to learn. It's definitely a great way to learn.
It is. And it's fun for me too. I only do things that are fun for me.
That is a good goal in life in general. Yes. Yep. All right. Valerie, thank you so much for coming on the show. People want to learn more, find out more about the things you do, where would they go?
They can just Google my name or look, just find my website, valeriejardin.com, valeriejardin, and they'll find links to everything, the podcast, the webinars, the books, the workshops, everything is there. I'm trying to keep all up right. And the Do Something for Nothing project. Please check out Josh's work. And you know what? Next time you see a homeless person in a corner or at the park, you know, they feel so invisible. It really doesn't take, you don't have to give them anything, just a smile, a handshake, ask them how they're doing. They want to talk. They want to share their story. They want to feel human. I've learned a
very
lot.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing all that. And
thanks, Chris.
Let's do this again.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
All right, that was it for this episode of Tips on the Top Floor. Thank you so much for being subscribed, for, well, just being here. And don't forget to check out Valerie's website, her projects, all around amazing stuff. And of course, don't forget to check out the videos that I brought home from RIT, from the Rochester Institute of Technology, the School of Photographic Arts and Sciences, where I had so much fun. tfttf.com/RIT. If you like this episode, let me know by giving TFTTF a rating on iTunes or by supporting it any other way. There's Patreon, there's word of mouth, there's like Amazon wishlists and all sorts of stuff. I'm very grateful for all your support and every bit helps. More at tfttf.com/support. That's tfttf.com/support. Thank you so much. Music for the show is, as always, by Jeff Smith, silent partner in Hans Peter Kagroid Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Reese Pixie Matt, Rafsitar Armstead, and Slack Invitations by Chief Invitation Officer CIO Rusty Russ. The link to get on the Slack is in the show notes. And by the way, speaking of the challenges, I'm giving you a few more days for the end of this challenge. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media, including Mastodon at Chris, MarquardT. Go out and take amazing photos. Share them with the world. Be nice to each other. And happy shooting.